the most important meal of the day, second breakfast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another Second Breakfast podcast. I'm Andy Roth alongside Phil Duvall. Say hi, Phil.
Hi, everybody.
And
you're like, welcome back to another Second Breakfast podcast, but not really for us, Andy. Not really for us.
It's true. It's deja vu all over again.
So here's the deal. We recorded this episode yesterday and everything fell apart. The wheels came off and burned and it didn't record right. And now we're recording it again. We're re-recording an episode that I'm not too happy about re-recording.
Sure.
And it's not because I don't like talking to Andy, and it's not because I don't like repeating myself, because I love repeating myself. I love repeating myself. But it's because we're talking about this horror movie. And I talked about it yesterday and relived my hellish experience. And now we're going to talk about it again with each other.
Yes, let's be clear about something. What happened was one half of the audio track was non-existent. So I was basically in a Buster Keaton movie, and Phil was responding to nothingness. If that happens again, we're just going to release it. So I might be talking, I might be pantomiming right now and no one can hear me. So blah, 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 fish cakes. Whatever.
Oh.
Yes.
Ooh, I can't believe you said that.
So life's an adventure. And what I have to say about what you just said, Phil, I don't care that you're going to be uncomfortable again.
I hate you.
I know. And okay. And this is something, so ladies and gentlemen, Second Breakfast Nation, every time we finish a podcast, we, you know, one of us says to the other, like, good job, good show, because it's true. I mean, we're awesome at what we do, right?
We're also just very affirming to each other.
It's true.
That's a nice hat, Andy.
Thanks. Your beard is looking especially manly today, Phil.
Thank you.
You have just the perfect amount of scruff. However, I fear that in my desire to be affirming last night, and I am not just saying this out of sour grapes, I may have overstated my case. I don't actually think we did a wonderful job with it last night. I thought we kind of rambled, and so I'm excited to get the chance to redo it.
Okay.
I'd rather not be redoing it. Let me state that right up front.
Well, I'm confused about this idea that you and I would ramble about anything. Is that a thing that's happened in the past?
Phil, I'd like to answer that by telling you about my third grade teacher.
All right. So okay. here's the deal. Andy has putting me through a little thing called horror school. I don't like horror movies. I have not seen a lot of them. Well, I've seen more than I think I realized, but it's not a genre that I'm excited about generally. Mm-hmm. I would rather go see, if I was going to go see like a movie in the theater, I don't look to see horror movies. I see action movies, drama movies, and comedies.
Sure.
But I will see a horror film if for some reason it pops out in a way that's interesting to me. Mm-hmm. But mostly I just run from them. And when I do see them, I'm like a little child cowering in my seat. I wear hoodies so that I can't be touched by the animals and the monsters. And then I look around a lot.
You can close up like Kenny.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And with the exception of one film that I can think of, I never see them by myself. I always go with somebody.
What film was that?
I saw Fright Night, the remake, by myself.
Oh, okay, okay.
And sure. I hated it, and I liked the movie, and I hated the experience.
Sure.
It was me in the theater all by myself except for one other person in the middle of the day, and I was like, so he's the vampire that's going to kill me. And so the whole time I was like, I'm not happy. So anyways, yeah, so I don't see them. But Andy and I have talked about this, and it's something I'm trying to do, so Andy is assigning me movies to see.
Yes.
Andy is my I am the grasshopper and Andy is my kung fu master.
It's true. And it is interestingly, while I think that's a fair assessment, this horror school started with an assignment you gave me. You told me to see House of a Thousand Corpses.
True story.
And I saw it and we watched it. I saw it and we talked about it and that was great. And that was kind of like horror school zero. That was the incipient moment.
Yeah. That was kid A. That was Patient Zero. And the reason is because I was like, Andy, I don't see a lot of horror movies, but that movie terrified me when I saw it 10 years ago. And so Andy saw it and he was like, Phil, that wasn't very scary. You need a better understanding of what scary is. And I was like, okay.
And so So there have been, I have given him two assignments thus far. We saw the remake, the 2013 version of Evil Dead.
Yep.
And then I tasked him with watching The Omen.
Yep.
And now this is movie number three, a little Spanish ditty I like to call, because its title is, Wreck. And it's stylized as like the wreck, the record button and light on a video camera.
Yes, right? Or as they say in Espanol, recordar.
Recordar, yes, indeed. And it is, it is not reinventing the wheel in terms of structure. it's a fair, it ascribes to all, to many common tropes. The storyline is fairly simple. A fetching news reporter.
She is fetching.
Fetching, yes, indeed. Ángela Vidal is her is her character name. I don't remember her actress's name, but that's okay. She
Manuela
is,
Manuela Velasco.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And here's the deal. In addition to being fetching, she is excellent in this movie.
Quite.
She is the star slash host of one of these like public interest shows, like late night cable, like and what it is while you're sleeping, basically. And so she goes around, like the conceit is apparently like she goes around and like covers the night shift, or and she'll talk to, you know, sanitation workers who work on the night shift, or you know, people who, you know, policemen on the night shift and things like that. And this episode, she is in a firehouse, and she's like, what do firemen do at 3 a.m. when they're right. working that shift?
Right.
And so there are two characters. There are two sort of central characters from the very, very beginning, and one of them you don't see, because in addition to Angela, there is her cameraman, Pablo. And that brings us to, and we'll talk about this more in a minute, this is a found footage horror movie.
It is, which immediately will turn some people off.
Yes. When we talk about it in more detail, and we'll even define it when we talk about it, I hope we talk about the fact that it's done as well as a found footage movie can be done. And
we won't talk about that.
You're the worst.
I am very bad at being a person.
and so they go, and frankly, it's kind of a boring night. You know, nothing's happening. And so
right.
when they get a call, she's very excited and she wants to go along with them. And they let her do a ride along. And she and Pablo go into this building. And all it is, it's not like a fire. It's not a house, a building burning down. It's a woman is trapped in her apartment. And... I mean, it's a step up from Kitten in a Tree, but it's still, you know, not likely to tax anyone's abilities.
Yeah.
So she and Pablo go into this apartment building, and they go
God.
In with...
Oh, God. But I didn't think it affected me as much as it did. I really didn't. I understand.
And they go in with a couple of firemen. So there are four, and they are met by a policeman, so five... And like the security guard for the building. So there are six people who come into the building.
But they come in, no, they come into the house, into the apartment.
Right,
the
right,
person.
Right. They're met there and they go into the house. The unit, the apartment. And once they go in, to be blunt, all hell breaks loose. Literally. They are not allowed out. The building is quarantined.
As the religious authority of this podcast, let me just say, literally, all hell breaks loose. This movie is like it is hellish what happens to these people.
Yes.
Like it is like from hell what happens to these people.
Yes,
it's not good.
No.
So what do we want to give away?
I mean, okay. Here's the thing that's true about horror movies. They very rarely end well. And I don't mean like the faculty with which they are made. Like, they have good endings, they're just not happy endings.
No.
There are horror movies where...
Well, can I give you the happiest ending of a horror movie?
Please.
The happiest ending of a horror movie is that not everybody died. That's the happiest ending. Yes. The happiest ending possible. So there's the happiest ending is that there's more than one person that survives.
Yes.
Like that there may be a group of people that survive. Like maybe. And yes. You're like, whoa, that group survived.
Yes.
But there's still numbers of people who were massacred in some disgusting way.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. If more than one person survives, it's astonishing. And here's how ingrained.
And then generally, a happy ending is one person survives.
That's right. That's right.
And again, that means they survive to go on to like levels of therapy that no one has ever thought about. Ever. And they live in a corner just going, I can't.
Right. Spoiler, there's a survivor from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That is not a happy ending to that movie.
Ew.
So here's how ingrained that trope is, right? Zombieland, which is not a horror movie. I was astonished at the number of people who survived that movie. The number of people out of our core family, if you will, that survived that movie. I'm astonished. I couldn't believe it. Happy because I liked the people.
But you said it wasn't a horror movie, but it is clearly following a horror
exactly,
movie.
Exactly.
Like motif, you know?
Yes. Yes. So I guess that's an extraordinarily long-winded way of answering your question. Like, I don't want to say explicitly what happens at the end, but guys,
lots of people die.
Lots of people. People you care about die. People you
don't. Most of the people that you see die.
Die. Indeed. Talk about the monsters a bit.
Okay. So here's the deal. Like, they come into this apartment and there's this old woman and she's got blood all over her. It's kind of weird. And she's making weird sounds and you're like, this isn't good. Now, the tricky thing about this movie, and we'll talk about found footage again in a little bit, but the thing about the found footage that works for this movie is that it makes everything, like, the definition isn't perfect. So, like, it's not on film. It's not beautiful. And so you can't see everything. So this woman's over in a corner and it's kind of dark, but it doesn't look dark because it's stylized. It looks dark because it's like, well, this is the camera we've got.
Right.
Which is a difference. It's not this eerie, like, lighting. It's just, this is what we got, you know? And like, she's kind of in the corner in the dark and like, it does, it's not as creepy necessarily.
Camera, right? It's a
the
news
only
camera.
Reason, I'll be honest with you, the only reason when they go in there that I know that crazy things are about to happen and that this is really going to be bad is because I knew it was a horror movie.
Sure.
If I didn't know it was a horror movie, the first 30 minutes would not have been, I mean, it would have been boring, but I mean, I think like the first 20 minutes anyway, you're like, okay, well, I mean, I'm not scared.
Right, that's fair. That's fair.
And then you'd see this woman and you'd be like, well, I mean, you know, this doesn't look right, but whatever, you know, and then it's like, oh, this is a horror movie. So then she attacks one of the guys and bites him, right? Bites his, latches onto his face and bites him and bites. Now, all of a sudden, when someone starts is unintelligible and blood covered, and then they bite someone, zombie. Like, that's what we're thinking.
Yes,
zombie.
Indeed.
Now, then the bitten people eventually become infected and they start to bite people as well. Okay. Again, we're talking zombies here, people. Except, is this really a zombie movie, Andy?
I sort of conflate the two. I mean, it would be easy for me to say yes and just be done with it, but you and I both know that I'm far too annoying to just let it go at that. So I'll say
if you won't call 28 Days Later a zombie movie,
it's tough to call this a zombie movie.
Thank you.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. The difference, for those who don't know, the reason I don't call 28 Days Later a zombie movie is because the monsters aren't dead. And that is, I think that's a central thing about the zombie scare, right, is that you can't, right, outlast them. Whereas that, right, is precisely what they do in 28 Days Later. They wait for all of the infected to starve.
Having, right,
said that, I think the wreck infected are closer to zombies. I mean, it all takes place in one night, right? So you don't know if they would starve over 5 weeks.
Right.
They are certainly closer to dead because there are moments when they take a lot of physical punishment that,
yeah,
would have put down and infected from 28 days later, and it does not put them down.
It's true. But you've got things like the a dog that gets infected.
Yes.
And you have the fact that they don't die first. They don't die first. They're not dead. They're not the Walking Dead.
Right.
Literally.
Some of them do lapse into comas.
The thing that I love about The Walking Dead, the television show, honestly, I mean, it's weird because it gets a lot of criticism and I think actually probably deserves a lot of it.
Mm.
But it's that someone is just actually being faithful to the zombie tradition over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what zombies are and we're going to do our best telling a story about it. Yep. Like, for as long as, you know, we want, basically.
Yeah.
And we're going to use a bunch of British people and pretend they're from Georgia, which is a little frustrating for me.
Because
we have more people than England.
Because of all the members of Georgia SAG that aren't getting work, or?
I mean.
Sure.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, again, there are more Americans than Englishmen. Like, just numbers-wise.
That's true.
You could have found a Sheriff Rick in America, period. You could have found a governor from America, period. Sure. And it's just, there's times with, Hugh Laurie. 8 seasons of House, his American accent is flawless.
Flawless, yes, absolutely true.
He is the one exception, and Damian Lewis, it's Lewis, right? Damian, who was on Homeland, but him on Band of Brothers, because he was on Band of Brothers, he gets away with it.
But he was also raised in both places. So it's
I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. His American accent is just how he talks when he's in America. Like, so.
Fine. Yeah. So there you go. So I think I'm annoyed in general by this, but this is a digression. Let's get away from British people pretending to be Americans and back to the Spanish.
Yes. By the way, Second Breakfast Nation, the reason that we just went on that diversion is not the normal reason that we go on diversions here on the podcast, which is just because we feel like it.
I am ashamed.
It is because this movie is so scary that Phil doesn't want to talk about it.
That is a completely accurate statement.
There we go. So in describing or in explaining why it's scary.
So it's a zombie movie.
What's a zombie movie?
It's a zombie movie. Okay, here's the deal. It's not a zombie movie, but it is. And here's what we have to deal with, right? Is that it doesn't follow our definitions of a zombie movie, but mm-hmm. regardless of our definitions and our purest attitude about it, like it has people biting other people who get infected and then bite other people.
Yes.
And that's the manner by which people, and then they die and everybody dies or somebody dies, whatever.
Yeah.
Like that is a zombie, that is sort of the subgenre of zombie movies that we've got accepted. Yes. So there's that reality. Like regardless of what we think, or George Romero would think, or whatever, like this, there is a whole subgenre of zombie movies.
There's a subgenre of zombie movies where they run fast. There's a subgenre of zombie movies where they are unkillable. And people, especially these days with The Walking Dead, more and more people are conditioned to shoot them in the head. And that kills a zombie.
Which brings me to, okay. Here's the deal. While I was watching this movie.
Yes.
Here's something that's now that with the sort of all these new zombie movies that are coming out, and there's all this zombie stuff coming out with all this sort of this flush of zombie things. Every single zombie movie requires that people have never heard of zombies, and it drives me a little crazy at this point.
Sure.
Like the whole time I was watching this movie, I was like, "You guys have heard of zombies, right? Don't let them bite you. Shoot them in the face. Like, what am I the only person here? Like, come on." But that's what's funny is like they exist in a universe where zombie movies have never existed.
That's fair. But let me posit this. Even if I didn't know about zombies, if someone's attacking me, I'm going to try to not let them bite me. I mean,
that's just a given. Like, but then if they're trying to bite me, I'd be like, he's trying to bite me. I'm going for the head.
Right, right. I will shoot the thing that is trying to hurt me.
But also specifically in the head.
Yes. Or, for example, were I to shoot them, say, in the center mass, and it didn't stop them?
I wouldn't
stop trying to shoot them elsewhere. Somewhere more important, for example. Like the head.
Oh, the head, right. The head.
Right.
But they the do this in superhero. Elbow. They do this in left elbow. They do this in superhero movies as well. They're like, wait a minute. You're telling me that like you have different kinds of powers than other people? What is this? It's like,
right.
Have you read a comic book? This is a superhero. At least that's what I love about Unbreakable, is they're like, we live within this world where we've all heard of this, and it's actually true. You know? Like, I would love for there to be a movie where there's a zombie outbreak and someone's like, these are zombies. I've seen a ton of movies about them, and I thought they were fake, but here they are for real, so let's do what we need to do.
I have two responses to that. One, in Pain and Gain, which I would like to say not that much about, there is a moment where they're talking about planning these crimes where they kidnap people for their money and sort of hold them hostage for their own money. And The Rock says to Mark Wahlberg, like, basically, what's like, I don't know, like, are you qualified to do this? And Wahlberg's response is, I've seen a lot of movies. All right. I know how this goes down. Right. And so I feel like were we actually presented with a zombie apocalypse, people would be like, I know how to, and we would all get eaten anyway. The second thing I want to say is there was a wonderful Onion headline a few weeks ago that was like, zombie apocalypse starts, literally everyone knows how to handle it. It's like,
that's pretty fantastic.
Like, zombie apocalypse lasts for like 30 minutes or something, yeah. Or something like that.
Be so, like, forget it. Got it.
Yeah. So let's talk about found footage.
Okay. So found footage, guys, is like that. Literally, it's like a movie where instead of it looking like someone made a movie, we are seeing the camera work of someone holding a camera that's a character in the film, and like later on after the fact, we have seen this footage. Mm-hmm. So it's generally handheld. The most obvious, the most popular example of this, the groundbreaking example of this, is Blair Witch Project,
yes.
Which a lot of people hate, and a lot of people hate found footage because of that movie. But nevertheless, it's a trailblazing movie. It nevertheless changed the genre of horror films, I think, because it introduced this whole and movies in general. Because I've seen found footage is now a sort of a genre. We've seen it with Cloverfield is a very famous one, mm-hmm. which is a found footage monster movie. We've seen it with Chronicle, which is a found footage superhero movie. Very dark.
Yes.
You haven't seen Chronicle.
Marvelous.
See Chronicle. Yeah. Oh, see Chronicle. Marvelous movie. So yeah, you have, and then the Paranormal Activity movies, I guess, are found mm-hmm. footage.
They are.
So, which I've never seen one of them, so I just believe it, but I've never seen them. And this movie, it works. It really, really works. You know.
And that's kind of a minor miracle, right? Because most of them don't. Because in pretty much every found footage movie, with the exception of two, and I'm thinking of this movie. And I mean, and the sequels actually work as well, but Rec 2 and Rec 3 work as well, but this movie and Chronicle work.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Work. And the reason is there are two fundamental issues with found footage. The first one is, I don't know about you, and I maybe I'm more susceptible to this than most people, but shaky cam drives me up a freaking wall. And what you've got is what you, in, for example, in Cloverfield, which is a movie that I enjoy. It's a movie I own. The guy is just a guy videotaping a friend's birthday, a friend's going away party, right?
Right.
And so he's not, he's like, oh, I'm running. But the camera.
At some
like,
point, you're just like, put the camera down. And
that is the second problem.
Sorry, I apologize. No,
that's fine.
Thing.
That's fine. That is the second thing.
Oh, it's my like, God.
Why
camera
are you still
down.
Filming? And Chronicle comes up with an ingenious way to fix this, and the ingenious way, or to respond to this and to deal with this, these both of these issues actually, and so does Rec. And the way Rec does it is, it's a professional cameraman. A professional cameraman, so it's going to be steady.
And he's a news guy.
His
attitude is, we need to get this.
Yes, and he's told. Yes.
Yeah, and even if they're like the cheap overnight special interest, you know, news crew, they're like, you know those guys. I mean, you see her at the very beginning, they kind of establish that she wants to be more taken more seriously than she is. And frankly, probably wants to be taken more seriously than she really deserves to be. She's kind of lightweight. Like, she doesn't really, she's kind of goofy and not that really, you know. But when things start to happen, she's like, she says it like three or four times during the movie, don't stop filming no matter what.
Yes.
And, you know, that's like, you know, the cameraman's like, well, then okay, I won't.
Right.
And he doesn't. And it really works. It really, really works. And what's even more fascinating about it, so on one hand, you've got that. They create a reason for found footage to exist. It justifies its own existence.
Right. Also, real quick, just to drive this point home, I agree with you when you say that this camera isn't the best camera in the world, but it is better than most of the cameras that are used in other found footage movies.
Sure, because it can be. It works in that way, and it works from the point of view of the other thing that it does is the camera becomes essential later on in the movie. The fact that there's a camera actually becomes a plot point.
Yes.
Like, and a tool that they use. And I won't say anything more than that, except that, again, they find reasons. Because, again, there's things that happen where, regardless of record everything, there's things that happen that you're like, even then, put it down.
Right.
And they actually, the filmmakers have actually figured out how to make it so that the camera, that it continues to be such a way.
Right. It's not just essential to us because that's how we're watching the movie. It's essential to the characters in the movie.
Yes. And that's pretty amazing to think about. Yeah. So they've made that work. Now, since that works, what happens is it creates a feeling. A couple things I want to say about what happens. One, I talked about the grainy footage. This actually works in its favor because it's not that it's hard to look at or ugly. It's perfectly fine, but it's not super high def. And what that does is it makes it less gory.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is scary. And there are moments of gore.
There is blood. It's not a bloodless horror movie, certainly.
It's not, but it's not reveling in it.
Right. Right.
And there's not like the high def, like, you know, like stabbing in the kidney or something. It's not like high def gore. So that actually does change things.
It's less gory, I would say, than any of Romero's zombie movies, except for Night.
First one. Right. I think that's probably true. That's probably true. The other thing that it does, and this is what found footage is meant to do, but I think it does it, it puts you in the movie because you're seeing everything from the point of view of one of the characters. Yes. Now that's what found footage wants to do in general.
Right.
But this movie, with the exception of a couple cuts, especially once the action starts, there's not a whole lot of cuts.
It's true.
And so what it does is it gives this sense of immediacy. It gives a sense of immediacy where everything is happening, and it's like everything is happening right now, and like you can't, like that he's, you know, the cameraman's not pausing it.
Right.
You know he's not gonna.
Right.
Because there's no time to.
Right.
It doesn't give you a break. So the way that it's shot ends up being part of the storytelling in a way that works really well for making the movie, ready for it, scarier.
Yes.
Is it scarier because you don't get a break because the cameraman doesn't get a break?
Right. It's the immediacy that is engendered by found footage is always interesting, but the problems with found footage often get in the way of that. And because they have taken away the issues with found footage with the conceits that they use in this movie.
Right.
The immediacy, it just hits you full front.
Yeah.
And it's just
nonstop. You don't have a chance to break. Once the beginning is kind of like, okay, this is happening. I wonder what's going to happen. When's it going to get scary? And then once it starts, it just doesn't stop.
The movie just
sort of unravels.
Yes.
The movie doesn't unravel. The storytelling's fine.
Yes.
But what happens is an unravel.
Reality unravels.
Yes. And it literally by the end, you are just.
It's less than an hour and a half long, right? It's like 80 something minutes.
It's around there. I'm not 80, sure, but it's.
Right,
it's,
85 minutes. The first 7 minutes are boring. They're supposed to be, right? But once they go into that apartment.
Yep.
So say it's 7 minutes, right? The remaining 78 minutes are scary. They're just scary. The other thing that I like that they've done with found footage, and this is something that found footage could always do, but I can't remember another case where this happens. Roger Ebert used to say, you know, and this
the movie is 78 minutes long.
78. So 71 of those minutes are scary.
Yes.
God,
it felt like a 2 hour. Felt like a 2 hour movie
because it's totally relentless.
Right.
So Roger Ebert used to say, you know, and he didn't just say it about horror movies, although it happened a lot in horror movies, that you know, very often, you know, this will be the frame that you're looking at, and someone will be standing in that frame looking off in the distance, and then the frame will shift, and there'll be someone now in the frame, and the original person will be surprised, which scares, you know, if it's a horror movie, it scares the person and it scares the audience. And Ebert was always like, I know why it scares the audience, but why does it scare the person? They're in the same room. Right. Like the but with found footage, you are looking at what the cameraman is looking at through the viewfinder, and that is right. It. So when he turns around and is surprised, it doesn't matter. Yes.
The other, because it is, you are seeing what he sees, and so he has a right to be surprised. But the other thing that happens is, like, funny you say that, because that being said, this movie doesn't do a lot of, like
it's right behind you.
It doesn't actually do that.
Yes.
You expect it to, and it really doesn't, and it's kind of amazing that way.
It's the one benefit to having a fast zombie, right? Because the remake of Dawn of the Dead just turns them into it into a track meet, right? But the thing that is usually scary about zombies is that they are often undetectable because they're so slow moving. But this, because it doesn't matter if they're undetectable or not, because you're in a confined space and you're quarantined in, it doesn't matter if they're undetectable. So what's scary is not, oh, it's right behind you. It's wherever they are, if they figure out where we are, they will be on us instantaneously.
Yeah. Now, there's one other thing I want to say about this movie, because I want to give you guys a sense of what kind of a horror movie it is, because I don't know if you want to see it or not. I mean, it's scary.
Yeah.
Not super gory, but very scary. Yes. And not, again, still gore, just not super gore.
Right. It's not
but
the
scary.
Point. Yes.
It's in Spanish. We may have said that at the beginning. It's made in Spain, hence the Spanishness of it.
With the rain on the plane.
Just like that.
Just like
and
that.
It is scary. Scary in Spanish. So if subtitles bother you, get your life together and learn to read. But then the other thing I want to say about it is, okay, it follows a haunted house structure, actually, in a very strange way.
Yep.
And what I mean by that is, in Halloween, people will actually do their houses like haunted houses. You go to something and it's a haunted house. That's kind of lame. But there's an amusement park in Orange County. It's, I think, the first amusement park in California, called Knott's Berry Farm. And Knott's Berry Farm, once a year, I think for like a month, Knott's Berry Farm transforms during Halloween to Knott's Scary Farm. Now, during the day, it just looks like they've got all the cobwebs and it looks just like all the stuff is set up for something horrific. But it's still just a normal park, amusement park, just Halloween-themed park. And you can take your kids there and get all the stuff.
Interesting.
Right. But at some point during the day, towards the end of the day, before it gets dark, they close the park. Like halfway through the day, they just close the park and they kick out everybody. And then you have to have tickets to get into Knott's Scary Farm. And you cannot be a child. Okay. I think you have to be 12 at least to go, or 13 at least to go.
That's amazing.
And then you have to go to this thing, and then they have these different haunted houses, which are basically mazes, you know, which is basically you just start at one end and walk through, but you have to, there's no going back. There's no exits. You just get out. And while you walk through, you just walk through a horror chamber where things follow you and jump out at you. And but done professionally. Like, this isn't like Ma and Pa Kettle's, haunted mansion.
Goof. It's actually
this
well
is
done.
Terrifying. And then while you're walking around the park from place to place, there will be people hiding in bushes, like with chainsaws, and they'll jump out and be like, ah, you know, I mean, it's like, you have to go and be willing to put yourself in. I mean, this is the kind of thing I think you would love. I went when I was 15 and I was like, never again. So anyways, I guess what I'm saying is that the great thing about those mazes is you go in one end and you got to come out the other. And this movie, they quarantine. We didn't really mention this, but the people get into the house, and within 10 minutes of getting into the house is completely sealed off from the outside.
And government they know it. And they know it. Like,
so they're quarantined, and they have to try to find a way out because they're stuck inside with these things. At first, they're trying to get out because they're trying to save people.
Right. Real quick.
Then they're trying to get out because they're trying to escape.
Yes. Real quick. I want to mention that as well. Just going off of that, something that I really appreciate that this movie does that, frankly, not a lot of horror movies do, there aren't a lot of dumb decisions made.
Really?
Right?
No.
Like when it comes time for a normal person to be like, I am getting the H out of here, they're like, I'm leaving
the
building.
Getting the H out of here. Right.
Yes.
I mean, I think the main character and the camera worker, there were a lot of times when I was like, oh, no, don't follow them. Just stay where you are.
Right.
But they play this whole, we've got to cover, we've got to show the truth thing. And you can see how that it's plausible.
Yes.
But the movie literally starts at the bottom floor.
Yes. Yes.
The movie literally starts at the bottom floor and moves up each floor and ends at the top floor.
Yes.
Like, that's how the movie, like, it literally functions like that. I mean, it goes up and down a couple times between the first and bottom floor, but then after that, it goes just to the top. Yeah, like, just this floor, nope, this floor, nope, this floor, nope, here we go to the top. Like, what a, and ends there. And what happens in the final scenes? Again, the way that they use the camera is amazing. It is amazing, guys. It makes the movie terrifying. And beyond that, it is one of the most evocative and just bone-chilling final scenes that I've ever...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just...
It's you know, a lot of horror movies, most horror movies, I would say, there is some sort of reprieve. There's, you know, if it's a vampire movie, there's probably going to be a scene or two in daylight, right?
Yep.
Where he's like, okay, whew, I can catch my breath, right? Or the reprieve will be structural. Most of the time, that's comic relief, you know? And this is not, and I'll talk about this in a second. It's not a nihilistic horror movie. It's not misanthropic.
No.
But there is no reprieve.
Well, that's a different thing. Right, right. There's no reprieve for the audience.
Right.
Well, there, and yeah.
So what I find interesting about that is that it
finds a way to ratchet it up that the final scene still manages to be, it doesn't feel like you're just, you don't get numb. You don't get numb.
Right.
It really ratchets it up from scene to scene.
Right. Which is important because we've all seen those action movies, right? Where it just seems like noise. And the reason it seems like noise is because there's actually too much action. Like, there's no downtime, right? And there are horror movies that are the same thing. Like, oh, okay, I get it. But this finds a way to both not have a reprieve in it and also...
And the found footage, this is a big reason of that because it's you are in this thing and there's this feeling, this sense of like, if we can just make it through the next day, if we can just get out of this house, there's these, this will be over. But until then, it's not. Right. And so as long as we're in the house, which is the whole movie, you feel like there's this, there's just an impending dread, but there's this real, it's an immediate dread. It's not like Nightmare on Elm Street. You, like you said, you have the daytime. Hopefully you don't fall asleep. If you fall asleep, you die. Right. Maybe.
Right.
There's that whole sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Vampire movies, same thing. You have the daytime. Nighttime is scary. But with this movie, there is this sense, and the problem with a movie like Evil Dead is, well, the problem for the characters, not for us, is that there's this remoteness to where they are, that and the bridge is out, right? But there's this sense that they're stuck in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
So there's no real reprieve there. They have to face whatever this thing is. This movie has this sense of there might be a way for us to get away from this thing.
Right. Right.
And it's really, but that final scene, here's the thing that I think about. Is that really, what can you do to scare us at this point? What haven't we seen?
Right.
And I think they are able I think they are able to create something that, again, fits within a ton of horror movie tropes and yet feels different and
feels
scary.
New. It feels new.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. They manage to, without really, you know, like the cliche is, oh, they turn the tropes on its ear. They don't. They give it to you. It's just fresh. It's just
fresh. And Andy mentioned the fact that it's not a hateful movie. I think this is important. There's a lot of horror movies out there that seem to, you know, the term that's, I think Roger Ebert coined it, but someone, if not him, like he used it a lot, this idea of torture porn, which is the idea of a movie that revels in watching people be in misery, which to some degree is the horror genre itself. Like, we're watching people be scared and miserable and die. And then we go, I'll pay money for that. But part of it is we pay to get scared.
Right.
And then there's movies where it feels like you're paying to just watch something awful and everyone in it is awful. And you're just like, it just feels wrong. Like everything Eli Roth does. Like, it just feels like, ugh, why is this happening?
Right. The difference, I agree with you that there's an element of it in all horror movies, but the difference is a good horror movie that is not a torture porn movie will allow you to identify with the characters. There's no way to identify with the characters in, for example, Hostel. Okay.
Or Hostel Part 2. Oh.
Sure. Because
it's just, look at how awful we can make things happen.
Right.
Look how awful people can be.
There's no, in other words, I mean, you say like, well, the way you identify with them is you don't want to be trapped in an Eastern European hostel and tortured to death. Well, of course you don't.
Right.
Wow. That's not like groundbreaking. But
right.
For example, I am neither female nor a mother, but I can identify with the mother in The Exorcist.
Right.
He's like, oh my God, what is happening to my little girl?
Right. Right.
Right? And it's because it's a well-made movie. Right. So that to me is the dividing line between torture porn and and
like good regular horror. Just good horror movies. Yes. Yeah, no, and I think this movie falls into that category.
Yes.
What else do we need to say about this?
Guys, this is I know we've said this, but I really want to drive home the point. This is a scary movie. It doesn't try to do a lot, but what it tries to do, it succeeds at brilliantly. And all it's trying to
I saw it in the middle of the day.
Yep.
With a friend,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't talk during the movie, but we just watched it, and I think that I was not as scared as I thought I was going to be. And then, so this movie has a lot of doors, and basically, like, a lot of doors could sit in an apartment building, and then you open up the doors, and, like, hell awaits, you know, and, like, what will happen? What is behind this door? So I live in a house that has this long
also
hallway.
Hell.
This,
also right, hell behind
this. I live in this house that has this really long hallway. Like, it's an inordinately long hallway for how small my house is, and it's got seven doors. This hallway has seven doors, and we keep my dog in that hallway when we're gone, like as sort of like a dog run, but he doesn't really run. He just sits and goes, I'm in the hallway. And so we close all the doors. So my friend and I see the movie, we go out to dinner, we come back, and then it's nighttime, and I open the slider door into the hallway, and I look down the corridor, and there's six more doors, and they're all closed. And I was like, oh, this is going to be awful. And one of those doors is to the outside, and every time I walk by it, I'm just waiting to see, like, the face of the last thing in the final scene, just waiting for me.
Right.
I'm just waiting.
Yeah, yes.
And so it's definitely done its job. Because it's been 4 days now, 3 days, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So I was able to sleep that night.
Sure.
But I do have these visions, definitely, for sure. It's in a very, very visually powerful movie.
Yeah, folks, I was building this movie up to the point, just every time I talk to Phil, like, oh, I can't wait for you to watch this. It's going
to
kill you.
The last time I talked to him, he goes, Andy, the last time you talked to me, Andy says, I've been talking to our director. I'm kind of worried for you, actually. I'm a little, and he said it like genuinely, like, I'm just kind of scared for you. I'm hoping that this is going to be okay. And I was like, what the hell happens in this movie?
And frankly, what I was trying to do was build it up so much that it would, in some sense, vaccinate or inoculate you against the worst of it. I think I succeeded to.
I think you succeeded. I also think the fact that I think that seeing it the way I saw it kept me alive. If I had seen this movie in the movie theater by myself, I would not be here today.
Right, right. I will end with this. So I saw it for the first time at night alone in my apartment in an apartment building because I'm an idiot. So it was during the summer. It was a summer law school, and I got the DVD through Netflix. And when school started again, the day after I watched it, I bought the DVD. So I was like, "This is amazing. This is one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. I have to own it."
Right.
And scary movies like comedies, like action movies, they get less scary. They get less funny. They get less exciting the more you watch them. It's just because you know what to expect. This movie does not do that. It does not get less scary, which is sort of a miracle. And I invited a couple friends over, one of whom is our director. Hello, Keith, Mr. Keith Beccaro. And another is a frequent, although not recent, contributor to our podcast, Anthony Del Rio. Anthony,
get your life together.
Get your life together. We miss you, bud.
Andy misses you. Get it together.
Phil misses you too.
I judge you.
He judges you, but he also misses you.
Finds you wanting.
And so I was like, come over, watch a movie, and I was like, let's watch Wreck. And it came out that all three of us had seen it. It would be new to none of us. And I was like, well, I still kind of want to watch it because it was terrifying. And they were both like, I mean, it was pretty scary, you know, it was all right, you know. And I was like, all right, well, it scared the pee out of me, so let's do it.
Yeah.
And I noticed as we were watching the movie, like 5 seconds before anything scary happened, one of us would turn and talk to another person.
Just be like, hey!
Right. And I was like, why are we doing that? Oh,
None of us wants to be terrified.
We're distracting ourselves. So three dudes who had already seen the movie were trying to protect themselves from how scary this movie is.
Yeah, it's scary.
You have to like scary movies to want to watch this movie.
That's what's funny is because you were like, it scared me. I want to watch it again. I'm like, it scared me. Let's never do that again.
And that is as we go through horror school, Phil, that's something that I want to explore more, this idea that, like, why do we watch movies that scare us? Why is that?
Yeah, not sure yet.
Fair enough.
So what's the assignment for next week or next time?
Next time, which may be next week or may not be. I'm guessing it won't be next week. It is your reprieve. Since you didn't get a reprieve in this movie, I'm giving you a reprieve. The prototypical horror comedy, American Werewolf in London.
Ooh.
It is successful as a horror movie. It is successful as a comedy. And it has the, you know, we've talked a lot about special effects on this podcast, you know, and the two big sort of forms are CGI, computer graphics, and practical, which is you have to build something that looks like the thing you want to evoke.
Right.
And the spoiler, in a movie called American Werewolf in London, you see the transformation from human to werewolf. The first time he turns into a werewolf.
You gotta spoil that.
I know, right? Oh, by the way, he's also in England.
What?
Right?
Is he American?
He is. And
what?
Actually, at least some of it, I think, takes place in Scotland. The Moors, which says to me, I guess, Scotland, but maybe I have that wrong. The transformation to werewolf is the single greatest practical effect I've
ever
seen in my life.
It's famous. Yes. Like, I've heard of it, never seen the movie, and I've heard of this, and I've even seen bits of it because it's so important.
It's literally a special effect that is actually important. Like, in the history of movies.
I'm looking forward to this, and it's on Netflix Instant, so the chances are that I'll actually watch it this week.
Oh,
we'll see what happens.
Good.
Yeah,
John Landis directed it. It's great.
Johnny boy.
Indeed.
JL.
And so that's this installment of Second Breakfast Horror School. See Rec if you like being scared, because it will do that to you. See American Werewolf in London, because if you like horror or you like comedy, you will like that movie.
Okay.
And until next time, guys, class dismissed.
Nice.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.